Hello and welcome back to the Polaris Travel Health Podcast. Thanks for tuning in with us this week. This week, Jaden and I will be discussing the popular destination and a place where we see a lot of people coming in for travel consults, Peru.
Yeah, I think we both thought it would be interesting to kind of explore a few common travel destinations that you see in the clinic. I wanted to give kind of like a bit of a background to Peru as well, though. So Peru is a highly diverse country. It has three official languages, actually, which are Amaya, Quechua, and Spanish. They also have one of the most diverse landscapes in the world, with about 90 different microclimates, despite being about 8 times smaller than Canada. A fun fact that I saw in my research about Peru was that about 3/4 of the world's 10 million alpacas live in Peru. But what can you tell us about it, Jason?
I love alpacas. I had no idea. That.
I told my friends that and they thought that was really cool.
So. I'm like, I know that, you know, alpaca is obviously a South American animal, but I had no idea. Like when you pulled out that number, I'm like, that's yeah. So, well, anyway, what can I tell you about Peru here from my standpoint? It's not a place I've been to, but certainly we have seen a lot of people coming in for travel consults, and it is an interesting country. There's a lot of different things to see and do there. Kind of depends, I guess, on you know what you're looking for, but it's maybe not necessarily the high class, like luxury. If you're doing the luxury shopping type tour or something like that, maybe it's not for you. But if you're looking for, you know, historical things and some ecotourism, it's definitely a place that is a good place to look at and relatively easy to get to from Canada.
Right. So one major thing that I kind of wanted to talk about and that we talk about in a lot of things is what are the health concerns that you might encounter in different areas of Peru? Like, should you be concerned about something like mosquito-borne illnesses, yellow fever, malaria, things like that?
Yeah, definitely those are concerns. So I guess maybe one place where maybe I would probably want to start off here is to talk about what we typically see from travelers going to Peru that book a consult. So I don't want to like paint everyone necessarily with the same brush per se, but generally speaking, most people fly into Lima, the capital, which is on the coast. So it's at sea level and it's on the coast. You know, it's a relatively modern place and it's an urban place. But most people don't spend a lot of time there. That's where you fly into the country. And most of the time, people at that point then fly into Cuzco, which is where you basically start if you're going to go to Machu Picchu, which is really the big number one tourist attraction in Peru. So very commonly, people will fly into Cuzco, then they'll trek and they'll go to see Machu Picchu, that sort of thing, and then usually make their way back to Cuzco. Then usually the other part of that's where it can get a little more diverse because pretty much everybody does the Cuzco thing. But then at that point, you're starting to look at afterwards, are you going to go to the Amazon? Are you going to go do some ecotourism and that sort of thing? Are you going to go to Lake Titicaca? Are you going to go to someplace on the coast? So that's kind of the first thing you always have to look at here when it comes down to what kind of precautions. You know, I always try and break things down by, you know, eating and drinking, bugs and vaccines. So right now I would tell you when you're asking about, I guess we're finally getting back to the bug stuff. From a mosquito standpoint, certainly we're not too worried about anything at the higher altitudes because mosquitoes really don't do well at the altitudes that, you know, Cuzco is or Lake Titicaca. But meanwhile, if you do opt to do something like the Amazon, then you are starting to look at things like malaria as being a concern. And yeah, dengue is always potentially a concern at the lower altitudes as well, even potentially along the coast.
Right. What about other types of diseases or other kind of like things that could get you?
Well, you know, if you start thinking about, you know, other, you know, vaccine preventable things, yellow fever is potentially a thing, you know, as we've talked about yellow fever in the past. And it is one vaccine where some countries you have to have it to get into the country. Peru doesn't care. You don't need any paperwork to get into Peru regarding yellow fever. But there are some yellow fever risk areas. Usually it's in the lower altitudes on the eastern part of the country, usually in that Amazon basin area. Like if you are sort of getting into the really jungly rainforesty areas, you're not going to run into it in the coast. You're not going to run into the high altitudes in Peru, in Cusco and stuff. Other things we'd want to think about, you know, I think we always would think about, you know, hepatitis A being a concern. And even with typhoid, I think that is something where maybe the risk isn't quite as high as perhaps maybe it is in some parts of Asia. But I still think that if you're going, and especially if you're going to be spending a little bit longer period of time and you're going to be there, not necessarily like not just doing a quick in and out business trip in Lima for 3 days or something. It's probably one, another one we would want to look at. And of course, traveler's diarrhea, always a concern. I think the traveler's diarrhea risk is pretty considerable. And, you know, I would definitely be looking at, you know, food and beverage precautions like usual, hand washing, taking some antibiotics with you, having them prescribed. And if you do get traveler's diarrhea in a severe way, that you can self-treat with antibiotics. And also Dukoral as a preventative measure for the prevention of traveler's diarrhea. You know, its value is, you know, sometimes a bit limited. It's not foolproof, but it is a nice layer of protection as well.
Right. So what about other types of safety concerns that might pose a threat to people that are traveling to Peru?
Well, when you start talking about safety concerns, I think one thing that you can always think about here is like violence and trouble along borders. Like there is some drug trafficking issues in Peru, just like there is in a lot of other South American countries. What I would tell you right now is that you're most likely, if you're staying in the typical tourist areas, your risk is relatively low. If you do get out into really remote areas, places that 99% of tourists probably don't go to, then you could maybe be more at risk for kidnapping or something like that and foreigners being a target. But I would tell 99% of the people going to Peru that that's probably not going to be a huge issue. You know, I think when you start thinking about, you know, other things, you obviously don't want to make yourself a target, you know, being around ATMs at night and, you know, wearing expensive clothes and that sort of thing. You know, I think you know, common sense precautions prevail. You know, I think whenever you start thinking about these locations where they're highly dependent on tourists, you know, I think it's sort of understood that, you know, affecting the tourism industry could be a really bad choice for a petty thief because the repercussions could be worse if you do something to a tourist. But that being said, like I still think, you know, common sense precautions definitely prevail.
Right. Yeah. Just being kind of like aware of your surroundings at all times. One thing that I always do and that I always say for people is to like wear your purse crossbody. And another thing is if you don't normally carry a bag with you, like if you're out and about and you're carrying, say, like a camera bag with you, which you normally wouldn't, it's very important that you like continue to make sure that you have it with you because it's not something that you normally would carry. So it's, you have to kind of like be extra checking your list of things that you have with you.
Totally. That's good advice, Jaden.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. So after kind of like focusing on some of the more concerning things or things that might be threatening, I wanted to kind of chat about the fun stuff that you might see or do in Peru. Like when you have people who come in for consultations, what kind of things do you hear from them? What types of things do you think that you would recommend?
From a fun perspective, you know, I think, like I said before, most people going to Cusco and Machu Picchu is really kind of the high point of this. A lot of times you'll see people that will be doing things that will be self-guided, but a lot of people are also on tours. So I think that when you start thinking about going there, like that's probably one of the coolest experiences. And then other things, there are a couple other things worth mentioning. I think one is called, I believe they're called the Nazca Lines. They're down in the southern part, sort of the southwest part of the country, not far from the ocean. There's some really unusual formations and nobody really understands how they got there and everything. And of course, some people say that aliens made them or whatever. they're kind of cool. And then of course, you know, if you want to get your tropical jungle ecotourism fix, there's no shortage of opportunities in this part of the world. You know, typically speaking, we don't see a lot of people going to Peru for like beachy coastal things. I think mostly because if you're going to if you're going to pick a country to go do that sort of thing, you probably will just pick another country, because what makes Peru unique is sort of these things. If you want a beach holiday, you know, there's places closer in Central America and where I think that industry is a little bit more established. So I think that those are the kinds of things you see. And of course, you know, there's lots of, you know, cultural stuff to see in this part of the world as well, and things to eat and things to buy. There's a few things down there that I would not, you know, guinea pig is a thing to eat down there, you know? And,
right.
Yeah. So.
Yes. I remember reading about when I was younger that the guinea pigs are quite like important culturally, and that they kind of like will dress them up sometimes, and then, but they also will eat them too.
Yeah. I think that sounds about right. So yeah, it's always a story that you can come back with, I guess.
Definitely. Definitely. Okay. Anything else you want to mention about Peru? Anything unique that you've heard of or anything like that?
Well, I think the one thing that I somehow just skipped over and I was waiting to the end to talk about is altitude sickness. It's
right.
Probably one of the big reasons we talk to people when they're going to Peru, because people will sort of have some level of awareness about altitude sickness and it being a thing. So we've already covered this on a previous podcast, I believe, but I just want to sort of reiterate how it would be relevant on this trip. So altitude sickness basically is your body's inability to sort of easily adjust to an altitude increase. Symptoms are very much like a hangover. So whenever you get past 7,500 feet, there's a risk of developing altitude sickness, and everybody will eventually get it at some height or another. But when you look at Cusco, for example, and geez, off the top of my head, I can't remember, but I think Cusco is 11,000 feet above sea level. So anyway, the bottom line is when you're flying in from Lima to Cusco, you will not be acclimatizing to any degree from the plane, because basically Lima is at sea level because it's on the coast. And then when you're starting to talk about flying into Cusco, then all of a sudden you get off the plane and it's 11,000 feet. So a lot of people will feel kind of woozy and kind of yuck shortly after they arrive at Cusco. Like, I've run into situations where I've talked to people and they've said by the time they get to the hotel room, by the time they grab their bags at the airport and get a cab and get to the hotel, they can already feel it. So it's definitely a thing. And there are a couple of things that you can do preventatively and treatment-wise. Treatment-wise, you can always self-treat, you know, with a pain reliever or treat your symptoms. Also a good idea to not do a lot of big activity right when you get to Cusco. If you even look at some of these itineraries and tour packages, most all of them have a setup where basically you arrive in Cusco and you spend the first day or so, you know, wandering around Cusco, looking at the shops. That's not a coincidence. They do that on purpose, because if you are feeling really lousy, they don't want you basically to jump off the plane and start trekking and start going to Machu Picchu. So usually they have it set up in such a way that you have a little bit of time. It really takes about 3 days to fully acclimatize to an altitude, but most of these tours build in at least a day in Cusco to sort of get your bearings and stuff. And then, of course, from a preventative and treatment standpoint, there is a product like acetazolamide, which you can take in advance of leaving, usually 24 hours before you get to high altitude, and then you take it until you've been at the highest altitude for a few days. And this stuff is something which can help prevent some of the symptoms of altitude sickness and also treat at a higher dose. So it's something that we prescribe pretty regularly to this part of the world. It's relatively straightforward, easy to take stuff. The main side effects are, can make you go to the bathroom a little bit more, can like increases your urination because it's a diuretic, makes anything carbonated taste weird. And then the other thing is that in some people it can cause a little bit of tingling in the fingers and toes, and that's the only real side effect, which I find to be kind of problematic. And if it's really most people it's no big deal, but for some people, if they are having a lot of trouble with it, then I just advise them to discontinue. But it's a long used medicine and it's inexpensive and the dosing schedule is pretty flexible. So it's a nice thing to have with you, especially if you've ever had trouble with altitude in the past.
Right, right. Yeah, I remember us talking about acetazolamide in the altitude sickness episode. And I thought that, you know, it seemed like a pretty well tolerated drug, if not something with perhaps unique side effects, not just like, oh, I have a headache, or oh, I feel a little strange, but that, you know, you can't have any sparkling water because it's going to taste like licking a sink.
Yeah. That is like, you know, that's a weird part of it, but it's, but yeah, in the grand scheme of things, it's a relatively straightforward thing to take. Lots of times I'll advise people, if they've never been to high altitude, you should just be prepared to have, you know, that it could happen to you. And the nice thing about acesulamide is, you know, I don't know, when we fill a prescription for like, I don't know, 20 tablets, it's like $13 or something. And that's if you don't even have a drug plan. So it's really pretty cheap stuff. So I don't really look at, you know, there aren't a lot of downsides to really getting some before your trip. So that's usually how I try to approach it.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Anything else you want to mention? I think that was pretty informative for the altitude sickness. I think that not perhaps everyone would know that would be a concern.
Yeah. Yeah. And look back in our archives if you want to hear a lot more about altitude sickness. And we probably got into it a little bit more there, which is, if you want a little more info, that might be a good place. But yeah, I think we've covered it. Like I said, this is a pretty common destination and one that certainly we see a lot of people. You know, I think when you run into situations on a trip like this, like sometimes people, if they're just doing what they perceive as being a pretty straightforward trip, if they're going to like a resort in Cancun for a week, you know, we do see a lot of patients like that, but sometimes some people may not think it's as relevant. But when you have people going to Peru, like I think it's one of the first things they think about is, oh, geez, that's kind of a bit more of a rough around the edges country. And there's a couple more other things to think about. I probably need to go in and talk to someone who knows about from my health perspective. And so we definitely see a lot of those appointments and they're pretty fun.
Awesome. All right then. Well, thank you for tuning in to this week's edition of the Polaris Travel Health Podcast. A reminder that the information and the advice we provided in this podcast are not a substitute for live medical advice tailored to your itinerary and your medical history. If you have questions, or maybe you're going to Peru, please head over to our website, www.polaristravelclinic.ca. Also, check us out on Twitter, @PolarisTravelRx, and our Facebook page as well. We hope you'll tune in again with us next week.
Thanks, Jaden.
Thank you.